This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Okay, first of all, sorry for the weird audio. Oh, sadness. Too many things going all at the same time. So, somebody is beeping a horn. I'm wondering if they're beeping at me. I don't know. Anyways, sorry for the weird sound. Let me just make sure that this is actually still running. I think it is. Yep, it is. Okay. So if this is really bad, I'll just re-record this tomorrow. So the deal was, I needed some batteries for my inflatable bear costume for last week. Because we were all out of AAs, and I thinks to myself, that's fine. I'll just use the batteries out of my recorder, and then I'll get some more batteries, and then I'll replace the batteries, and wow, it's been a busy several days. So I forgot to replace the batteries in the recorder, and when I got out to the car today and picked up the recorder, I was like, that seems light. And in fact, it was light, because it didn't have any batteries in it. So, I could have just waited till tomorrow night to upload this and record it on the way home from grocery shopping. But you know what? Things happen in life, and we just adapt. So, I thought, well, I've recorded this with my phone before. Let's just do that again, and we'll be okay, and we'll have this thing out of the way. So anyways, it's been a busy week. I'm a little tired because I have been staying up at night and getting up earlier in the morning. But it's been a good week. It's been fun. Our kids, Lizzie and Alan, are in Germany at this point. And so we're ferrying around the grands and taking care of them and getting them where they need to be. And, you know, we're old. And it's been a while since we've done these kinds of schedules, but that's okay. We're getting through it. It's just fine. And it's a pleasure to serve. So they left on Tuesday. Liz and Alan left on Tuesday. They will be back next Thursday, a week from today. And they seem to be having a great time. So far, we've managed to get the kids to all the things that they needed to get to. So it's good. Family is good. We're good. All is well. But there's that. And then in conjunction with that, things were a little bit of a frantic scramble on Friday because of costume. I ended up doing the same costume both on Friday and Saturday, which is normal, but I wasn't really sure I was even doing something on Friday, and then I wasn't even sure we were going to be in town on Saturday, but as it turns out, we were in town both days, and we just went ahead and I did the Love People Day thing, and it was fun. Had a couple of really great breakfasts with friends, and, you know, I was talking to my buddy about all the encounters, and this whole costume thing, there's just so many encounters that you have with people, and it's just so interesting. And I was telling my friend on Saturday that part of the challenge of all this is to be in a costume, you know, whether it's confusing or just cute or whatever, and especially if the costume's a little challenging, that's even funner, because then it's kind of a contest, you know, that people kind of give you a weird look, but at least they'll talk to you, at least they'll start a conversation with you. And then the question is, how fast can you get them over onto your side? And honestly, the first piece of getting them over to your side is the holiday. We've talked about this before, that, you know, if you're celebrating a holiday, people will pretty much let you do anything you want. But then some costumes are more, and so it requires you to be on your toes. I think I had mentioned before that when I was in the Mother's Day costume, which is this flouncy little Lolita dress that I had actually sewn, which is another one of those things. When you actually make your costume, that's something else that works in your favor. So you're celebrating something, plus you've made it. now all of a sudden there's a different kind of respect level that people will give you for those two things. But I was talking to him, and I've mentioned this before, and, you know, he sees me, it's somebody that I've known from the past, we're talking and all that kind of stuff, and then finally, he sees people reacting with me and interacting, and he just paused at one point, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, confidence is, he said something about, you know, confidence will goes a long way, or something like that, and I said, yes, it does. I mean, if you're confident, pretty much sell your way through anything. So it was fun, and I was relating to my friend on Saturday. You sometimes get these moments that you're just never going to get any other way. And when I told my friend about this on Saturday, he just kind of looked at me. I wasn't sure whether he thought that was a good thing or it wasn't a good thing. I don't know what it was, but anyways, I'm in this inflatable bear costume, and one of the things I mentioned this in my video that I did for it. One of the things that just cracks me up is when you're in some kind of weird costume and you end up in a line somewhere and everyone's trying to pretend like, yeah, this is normal. Because I was in UPS in a big long line at UPS waiting to turn in some stuff to return. And I'm standing there in this inflatable bear costume. You know, everybody's just standing in line like, yeah, nothing to see here. So, but one thing that was fun is I'd headed back to Walmart to see some friends that don't come in until 11. And so I'm getting ready to go into Walmart, and I got everything on, got the bear costume blown up, got my little t-shirt on, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what that was all about. He was just going down the road honking his horn. I start hearing this bear, these people calling out, and, you know, female voices calling out. And so I kind of turn and look over at them, and there's these two young African-American gals, and they're hurrying over to me, and, you know, very lovely African-American gals. And, you know, and I say, well, happy Love People Day, you know, and they react, and I put out my arms, you know, and they come in, each one, they give me a hug, and I wish them a great day and walk off. And, okay, what universe does that happen in? Just walking along and people are going to run over and give you a hug. You know, that's a good day. That's a good day. So it's just fascinating. The whole costume thing is just really, really fascinating. I was in a meeting today about cryptocurrency and the Assemblies of God starting to take cryptocurrencies. And you know, we got all these people in there from the missions departments and the cash receipts departments and the guy who's kind of over all the ministry departments and that stuff. And he's in there. And the lady who's over contributor services is in there. And a couple of the programmers. And we're all talking. And blah, 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 blah. We get done about 14 minutes early. And the administrator for AGUSM looks down and she says, is that Daffy Duck on your sock? I said, yeah, that's Daffy Duck. Held up the other one, and the other one I think was Tasmanian Devil or something. Marvin the Martian, I don't know. Because I never wear matching socks. And I'm about to launch into the kind of the zero-sum, zero-neuron commitment idea that I have, where I just buy, like, socks that are of the same theme, like cartoon socks that are Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes cartoons, and I just don't even bother to match them up. I just wear one from this and one from that, so it might be Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny or whatever, you know. So launch into that when one of the other people who's there says, okay, so what's tomorrow on costumes? And so, you know, I start up and they're peppering me with questions, and like for the next 10 minutes we're talking about costumes, and I'm telling jokes, and they're laughing, and, you know, because... And they're saying, you gotta come by, you gotta come by. And I'm like, you know, it's once you get into the building, there's so many people that want to see you. It's just a time issue, and, you know, COVID made everything weird, and I'm making excuses. So, anyway, and then other people are telling stories about the first costume they saw me in, you know, and a good time was had by all, so... So it was fun. it was fun. Tomorrow is going to be costume swap day, which is a little kid putting together the greatest superhero costume ever. And I do need to review that because he not only puts together the greatest superhero costume ever, but he makes up superheroes to go along with those costumes. The costume makes up 5 different superheroes. And it's cute. It's just cute. When I do the whole bit, it's cute. But I got plenty of things to talk about if I'm not doing the whole bit. So it's one of my funner costumes. I like it. It's fun. One of somebody else, because it's, he puts together the greatest superhero costume ever, and the superhero costume is a combination of Batman, Spider-Man, Woody from Toy Story, Wonder Woman, and Elsa from Frozen. And someone else popped off and said, so I imagine there's like tights and a tutu involved. I said, well, something similar. What I didn't tell them is I have a non-trivial number of women who look forward to me coming in tights. I've said this before, but it just so tickles me. There's one lady, you know, she takes pictures of me to send to her mom. And if I'm in there in the store too many weeks in a row, not in tights, yeah, her mom doesn't like it. She asked me, so now my mom's going to ask, are you going to be in tights next week? Yes, yes, I'll be in tights next week. Okay, because she really likes your legs. Well, thanks. Anyway, so that's good. That's good. Costumes are good. Still working on the Wear It Pink costume. That seems to be going fine. Should get most of that finished up this weekend, depending on, well, maybe not, because we're taking the grands, yeah, out to do some stuff, so maybe not. But I think we're only going to be gone over one evening, so maybe it'll be okay. Anyway, so family's good, costumes are good, writing's good. I'm at the end of chapter 2. That's all going fine. Obviously, my schedule has gotten chewed into because my granddaughter has needed to be at school at 6:00 in the morning, and then she has a practice till about 6:30, 6:40, and then she comes back home, and then I got to take my grandson to his school at like 6:50, 6:55. So that pretty much chews up, you know, an hour and a half, crowding into 2 hours. And so that's a loss. And then today, they both go to the gifted programs. They call it Wings here in Springfield. They both go to the gifted program. And so I had to go pick them up and have them down there about 7:40, so got all that under control. And then my wife had to pick up Clara from Wings and get her to Pleasant View a couple hours ahead of time to when she normally gets out, so she could go to a cross-country meet. And so she got her to go to that, and then she had to go pick up Asher from school, and then she's going out to the cross-country meet to pick up Clara from there, because they're supposed to be running about now. And then she's going to run out and get them some food, and then she's coming back because we've got small groups tonight. So, you know, a lot of things are moving. It's moving, and we have small groups tonight, so I got to get home and vacuum and do the last final few things that we need done for that. So it's all good. And the writing is going fine. Book 18 is going fine. I don't know exactly where we're going to land with this, and I don't know exactly what the epilogue is, but I know what the proverb is. And I know what the kind of the theme is, and I know what the major story's in, which is far more than I usually have. And I know what my characters are doing this time, unlike last time when I had one character where it took me 4 chapters to figure out why in the world he was doing what he was doing. So that was pretty exciting for book 17, but it came out fine. And I've already had some beta readers, you know, coming back. So, you know, the writing's going fine, everything's good. I did come across an interesting article, and I specifically looked for a certain thing because something finally occurred to me. I was out for a run earlier this week before the grandkids came down because I knew I wasn't going to. And so I just looked it up because I just wanted to see. So this is actually an older article, and this is actually from CNN. And the name of the article is The Complicated Gender History of Pink. Now, I should tell you right from the beginning, I don't think it's possible for colors, let alone shades of colors, to have gender. That's just silly. It's just as silly as something like French that genders all the nouns and all the verbs, and you have to match it all up. It's just silly. Because it dilutes what gender means. And we'll talk about that as we go on. But what is very interesting about this, and I had heard some of this stuff earlier, but it just kind of fleshes this out. And I have, I think, mentioned this before, but I thought this would be interesting to talk about. So, the author, Pooja Bhattacharya, I'm just going to slaughter that name, never mind. The author says this, I suspect this author is female. I have no way of proving that by how the author ends this article, which is the most funny statement in the entire article. So, story highlights were, quote, pink being a decided and stronger color is more suitable for the boy, close quote. Now, that's from a 1918 article. Okay? In 1918, the generally accepted rule was pink for boys and blue for girls. Now, we've talked about that. So that's how the article kind of starts off, and then the author goes on to say, when you think about the color pink, you are probably conjuring up images of little girls in pretty dresses with pink toys like Barbie or Disney princess in pretty little gowns. The color is overwhelmingly associated with delicacy and femininity. That, however, is a recent development. Okay? So they're talking to Valerie Steele, the director of the museum at FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York. And she says, if you go back to the 18th century, little boys and little girls of upper classes both wore pink and blue and other colors uniformly. In fact, pink was even considered to be a masculine color, etc., 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 in catalogs. Says Latrice Eisman, a color expert and executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. Quote, it was related to the mother color of red, which was ardent and passionate, more active, more aggressive. Even though you reduce the shade level, it was a color and was associated with boys. An article titled Pink or Blue, published in the trade journal The Infants Department in 1918, said that the generally accepted rule is pink for boys, blue for girls. The reason, et cetera, et cetera. So when did the reversal happen? That's the question. How and why did the reversal happen? And there's been a couple of different theories, but as this article documents, it's a little complicated. There's kind of a lack of consensus. So Steele says, goes on to say, in America by the 1890s and the early 20th century, manufacturers attempted, this is very important, who? Manufacturers attempted to sell more children's and infants' clothes by color coding them. So what were they trying to do? They were trying to sell something. And they thought, if we can color code them, that will push people more towards buying something years ago. Okay? Years ago. When I had college-age kids in the house, and I've mentioned this before, I would say, okay, when you say I'm a man, what does that mean? When you say I'm a woman, what does that mean? Women wear makeup. Okay. So no men wear makeup? Well, no, some wear men makeup. Right. Hang on. This is my beloved. Let me pause this for just a second. Here. Nope. Yeah, paused. Oh, hey, there we go. Okay, so when you're doing it on your phone, it automatically pauses. Whoop, whoop. We like that a lot. That was just my beloved. She said, oh, I forgot you were doing podcasts. She said, you know, just call me when you're done. Okay, so anyways, this is really important. So I said, well, wear makeup. And I said, okay, so no men, men wear makeup. You know, men are generally taller and stronger. Okay, so no women are taller and stronger? No. So whatever characteristics they'd come up with, of course, both men and women had those characteristics. And so then eventually they'd get frustrated enough that they'd turn it around on me and say, well, when you say when it's a man, what do you mean? And at that time, I was using genetics. I'd say, ah, that means I have an X chromosome and a Y chromosome. But I would follow that with, anyone who tells you any different is trying to sell you something. Because there's always a motive trying to assign gender into categories of things that aren't gendered. Colors are not gendered. You can make them gendered, but it doesn't make any sense when you take gender for what it is. Gender and sex are the same thing. And they have to do with reproductive engines. That's what it has to do with. Okay, straight biology. But then we clobber in all the rest of this stuff with it by trying to say, well, and you know, this is, but we're gonna, at the end of this, we're gonna get to why that is logically incoherent to do that. And I had a great example of that today. Anyways, so what's really important is that this expert in colors and how things transitioned and stuff, and there's, you know, other things to talk about in here, and it's a little convoluted, but freely, this expert says that, well, what you had is manufacturers trying to sell more things. And they thought if they could establish a color coding for what is male colors and what is female colors, that they could sell more stuff. Okay, so it had nothing to do with some sort of scientific investigation that determined that little girls saw pink differently than little boys saw it, and that's why they were more likely to choose those colors, blah, 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 blah. There's nothing to do with this. All of this influence of pink is for girls and blue is for boys is marketing. That's all it is. It's marketing. Okay? But they say in 1927, there were a lot of regional differences reported between how stores characterized the color. So stores like Best and Company in Manhattan and Marshall Field in Chicago branded pink as a boy's color. Others like Macy in Manhattan and Wanamaker's in Philadelphia identified pink as a girl's color. There was no unanimity. I should have gotten that easily. There was no unanimity at all. People were starting to think that by the 1920s, because of the manufacturer's attempt, there was a distinction between pink and blue for boys and girls. Okay? All marketing. So Steele believes that the acquisition, this is one theory, the acquisition of two 18th century paintings by American millionaire Henry Huntington started turning the tide in favor of pink being a girl's color. The blue boy depicted a boy dressed in blue, and Pinky portrayed a girl in pink attire. Huntington's purchase was widely published in the American press, Steele says. People started thinking that for hundreds of years, blue had been for boys and pink had been for girls, but that wasn't true. Quote, if you look back, little boys in the 18th centuries were blue and pink. We already talked about that. Today, a boy or man can't wear pink without it being some kind of statement. I think we're starting away from that. So, Poletti said, this is someone else, Joe Poletti, academic and author of Pink and Blue, Telling the Girls from the Boys in America. Poletti said that if a male friend of hers was wearing a pink tie or pink shirt, they would point it out. If it was just a color, you wouldn't do that. You're using a pink tie to show that I'm a feminist and that I'm not tied to gender roles. Okay, so now we have more stuff being built up. We have this manufacturer's attempt to sell more products by color coding things and convincing, oh, this is for girls, you should buy this. And then on top of that, now we're mapping more things, because as soon as you gender it, now you're inheriting the engines of the reproductive engines. You're inheriting the energies of the reproductive engines. And now all of a sudden you get into that whole thing. And we've talked about that before. Iceman agrees that there has been a steady growth in the usage of pinkage for men, but it does take a man who would look at it and say, I'm not threatened by wearing pink, or I don't think I'm going to be viewed by other people as being too effeminate if I wore pink, she said. However, researchers at Pantone found that the color pink is being adopted by more and more men than it ever has been. Iceman said, shirt makers like Pink in London and Ralph Lauren's pink polo shirts have helped make it popular among men. Okay. Iceman said that for some men, the bias against pink comes naturally, but times are changing. She said, quote, I think in general, the younger generation simply don't have some of the prejudices about certain colors that perhaps fathers and grandfathers do, who were raised with the idea that pink is only for little girls or a boy should never wear pink. Now, okay, why would we make that distinction? It started out just as a manufacturer's distinction as a way to sell more products, but once it gains prominence in the culture, now why are men enforcing this? Why are men concerned about this? Why do women react different to these two? Because now that we've genderized it, now we've infused it with the energy from the reproductive systems, now men are using that part of their signaling and triggering, can I have sex with it? So now when they see pink, the first thing is, oh, that's a potential for something to have sex with. And then they realize it's not. Then they have a disgust response. It has nothing to do with the shade of the color. It has to do with what's happening in their head and what society has adopted as a marketing ploy and then trying to map things on top of things. Paletti believes that we haven't yet reached the point where pink is just a color, but she's hopeful this can change. She noted that in the late 1800s, if a young woman was wearing black, people would assume that someone had died and that she was in mourning. Now we see young women wearing black all the time and nobody asks them who died. It's just a color. Interestingly enough, my buddy George, I was talking to him about this, and he said, yeah, in the Greek community that I grew up in, when a woman's husband died, she wore black the rest of her life. I mean, it was just like, that's it. She has to wear that color the rest of her life. It's just silly and ridiculous. Now, the really funny line in this article is the last one. Paletti is hopeful that pink may eventually be just a color, but it won't happen unless men stop justifying or defending wearing it. So now it's all men's fault that pink can't just be a color. It's like, hold it. It's not only men's fault. It's the fact that when a man wears pink, many times he is ribbed by women about wearing pink. So it's not only men who assign reproductive energies to this color because it's been gendered. It is also women who are assigning reproductive energies to this color. And they did do a little, blurb, a little video that, along with this article. And they talked in this article about the fact that pink is not, it's a tint, it's not a color, it's light red. That France, it was named after roses. That Japan, it was named after fruit blossoms. That we named it after a flower called the pink flower. It's a widespread symbol of love. Pink is thought of as feminine. They said women are three times more likely to wear it when they ovulate. Again, reproductive energies. Girls prefer it by two. They prefer pink. So they have been saturated so much with these pink feminine images. By the time they're two, young girls are already pushing toward it. Or they're pushing towards purple. One of the two. And they said in their little video that pink was more often worn by boys up until the 1950s. Okay. So you got all this stuff. So to me, this article just bolsters the fact that all of this gendering of stuff that is not gender is, in fact, just somebody trying to sell you something. And you can go along with that if you want to. But as soon as you gender things in this way, you are either trying to capitalize on that reproductive energy or you are simply unaware. And I think when people are gendering things, like making claims of gender, they are aware that a certain energy exists in those gender claims. That women make gender claims to be a male because they're looking to model and emulate that aggressive male energy. Men are making gender claims about women because they're looking to model and to generate that reproductive attraction that is with women as targets of men. But the problem with all of this is that it is completely incoherent when you look at it from a rational, logical statement, because there is no quality that you would assign as a feminine or masculine quality, just as a characteristic, that is exclusive. The only thing that's exclusive is men produce sperm, women produce eggs, or they have the machinery, or they had the machinery, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Exclusive. Even when you get into intersex stuff, intersex is usually a complete dead end. And so they don't produce either sperm or eggs. So when you're talking about the terms man and woman, the only concrete definition you have is sperm and egg. Now, you can try to layer in a bunch of other concrete definitions, or as we've talked about before, you can try to undefine it. And frankly, undefining it, if you're not going to define it as sperm and egg, is probably the most logically consistent thing to do. And here's why. With logical syllogisms, you have to be very careful about your set and the qualifications of your set. And you cannot make definitive syllogistic logic out of comparing sets without having concrete definitions. So I just got into this discussion with a friend today. He said one of the things that really bugged him about Blue's Clues was the fact that he realized at some point, and I'm getting my stuff together here because I gotta go because I have small groups. He realized at some point that in fact, Blue, the dog, was female. And he was offended by that because it was obvious that people were just trying to destroy gender stereotypes by making, they should have made the dog pink or they should have made it male. And I said, that's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Blue is not a masculine color. And that launched into this whole discussion that we have. Well, he says it is in our culture. Right. But why is it in our culture? Because people are trying to sell something and they're trying to capitalize on reproductive energy. But the problem is that Blue is not exclusive. So the logic that he was running in his mind, and I said this to him and he kind of stared at me for a little bit. The logic he was running in his mind is Blue is a masculine color. Blue, the dog is blue. Therefore, Blue is the dog is masculine. That's horrible syllogistic logic and it is incorrect. It has tons of logical fallacies in it because, let me illustrate it this way. Fire trucks are red. An apple is red. Therefore, an apple is a fire truck. Okay, that doesn't, that doesn't work at all. And it has to do with how your characteristics are interacting with the logic set that you're defining. If it's not exclusive, you cannot come to conclusions about the exclusivity of characteristics of items within that set. You can't do that. You can't say this set has a partial category of X, therefore anything that has this X category characteristic must be a part of that set. That doesn't work. Fire trucks are red, an apple is red, therefore an apple is a fire truck. But this is what people are doing across the board in their minds when they look at anything and immediately deduce gender out of appearance. They're taking a partial set characteristic, then they're taking an individual that is manifesting that characteristic, and they're mapping that individual into that set. And it's a complete logical fallacy. And so honestly, I can understand why the left, why the woke people have decided, you know what, we're just going to say there's no definition. Because you can just pin them down to nothing if they do that, because it doesn't make any sense. So anyways, that's that. It's very interesting. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. And now I'm going to turn out. Hopefully this is still running. We're looking. It is still running. Have a great weekend, everyone.